Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, and you can probably tell that over the summer. Not many books read, because I've been away for 7 weeks, but now I'm back at home in Berlin. So let's get on with it. Today's episode is all about the book called Armor by John Stakely, and the reason why I'm reading this is because it's been recommended to me many, many times. Loads of people have said, hey, do you like Starship Troopers? And I'm like, yes, I do like Starship Troopers. Did you like Forever War? Yes, I did. Do you like Ender's Game? Yeah, I did. These are all classics of the military science fiction genre. Why don't you read this one as well? Because it also is a classic of the military science fiction subgenre, let me put it that way. And I'm like, okay. And it's always been there in the back of my mind. I thought I'd get to it one day. But then someone on the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com, there's a thread there called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed. And someone said, why not try it out? And I was like, I do need an audiobook to listen to over the next few days and on my way back to Berlin. So I checked it out, and it was there on Audible, and it's narrated by Tom Weiner, and I was like, that's good pair of hands there, solid pair of hands. He's also narrated loads and loads of other stuff, lots of Heinlein stuff. Also, I quickly looked up here, Canticle for Leibowitz, The Man in the High Castle, some good books there. So I thought, yeah, I'll check it out, and I started listening to it, and I realized why this is compared to, especially Starship Troopers. Lots of people have said, oh yes, Armor is like a homage to Starship Troopers, or, you know, a continuation of those themes. And I understand why people say that. So this book was written in, I'll open the Wikipedia page here, 1984. And I had to look this up because in this book, they are, it says here, the military use of exoskeletons and insect-like alien enemies. In this book, they're called the Ants, and they fight the Ants. And it's about guys in exoskeleton body armor fighting ants. Not actually ants, but they're not like genetically modified ants. They're aliens called ants that have attacked Earth, and now they're fighting ants. And of course, in Starship Troopers, they're fighting bugs. They're fighting the buggers. No, not the buggers. Buggers is Ender's Game, isn't it? So in Ender's Game, they're fighting buggers. In Starship Troopers, they're fighting bugs. And here in Armor, they're fighting ants. And in... I should have really looked up. I can't remember exactly what they're fighting in Forever War. But other insect-like alien species, which are non-human, and swarms of them coming over. Hey, let's kill these people, these hive mind, living in hive kind of things. And the buggers are in my mind, because I've also read and listened to the audiobook of Speaker for the Dead, and me and Juliana are going to probably record that podcast this afternoon, so that'll be out soon too. Anyway, so what was I going to get to? Yeah, so this, written in 1984, and which is actually just before Ender's Game was published as well, because that was in 1985. Again, I have the Wikipedia page there as well. So first edition, 1985. So we have two kind of... not continuations, but responses to, or whatever what you want to call this, like these, the continuation of this military science fiction subgenre. So, yes, this book starts, Armor starts off with a guy called Felix who's on a spaceship, and then he drops down to the planet's surface in a way which is exceedingly boring compared to Starship Troopers, because I was thinking, oh, right, they're going to drop through the atmosphere and go down in the suits, like, you know, that space droppers, which is really great in Starship Troopers. It's one of the most exciting parts of it is that all these people just drop from space all the way down to the level. Whereas here, they kind of just teleport down. You're like, oh, they're already, and straight away. Now, that does make for an interesting first scene, an interesting opening scene of someone killing bugs, of someone killing ants. Sorry. And so Felix begins killing ants, and then lots of people die, and then he keeps killing ants, and then lots of other people die around him, and he keeps killing ants. And actually, this first section, this first, like, I don't know how many pages, but, you know, like, the first, it was like about 2 hours worth of audiobook. It was this one battle, this one drop down. And I was like, this is actually quite interesting. I know this is going to be a longer book than this. But in a way, I was thinking, wouldn't it be really great if this was the story? If this, like, this section here, where he is killing ants, and killing ants, and killing ants, and lots of people are dying around him, just killing ants and killing ants. Wouldn't it be great if that was the whole story? That was it. Killing ants, and then the story ends, and that single drop, that single mission, that through to the end, that he drops down, and he's the one lone survivor, or one of the main survivors, or becomes the hero at the end. He does the thing. And that story was actually... like I say, it was about 2 hours of audiobook, about an hour, like maybe 2.5 hours. And in the end, he starts off, and then he becomes a hero, and he saves the day, and manages to get out alive, and then gets back up to the spaceship, back up above the planet. And I was thought that was actually quite a satisfying novella length story there. of a guy called Felix who becomes a hero, who manages to survive against the odds and does really well, and that's great. And good. It's good stuff. The thing is, unfortunately, that isn't it. It goes on. But it doesn't go on with Felix's story. Then we cut across to somebody else called Jack Crow. And we follow a guy called Jack Crow as he goes down to this other planet where there aren't any bugs. They find this, you know, he's a pirate. It says here on Wikipedia, Jack Crow is a notorious celebrity, a one-time pirate, a morally questionable character with views and opinions that are just as questionable. He is a tough man who does not hesitate to kill. So it starts off and he just kills some people and gets out of prison, kills other people, and is just happy to kill people. And then we follow his story and he goes off this way and he joins up with some pirates and they're like, hey, come and work for us. And he's like, yeah, no problem. I'll come and work for you. And so he does, and there's this heist thing going on where he has to go down and infiltrate this thing and get some fuel from people or open up the defenses so these other people can come in and steal some fuel. And I mean, I would go on about this, but it's just, that was just boring, just tedious stuff. Now, the fighting that we had before, the bug fighting, the ant fighting, bug fighting that we had before was not that interesting. It was just like, and Felix smashed this alien in the face, and then he smashed that alien in the face, and then he smashed that alien in the face, and then he broke this alien in half, and then he smashed that alien, and then he jumped here and killed this other alien, and then he jumped here and then smashed that alien, and he came here. Like, it wasn't the most interesting fight scene, but at least there was a clear story. It was like, this person or this army is in danger. It's the first drop down to the planet of the homeworld planet of Banshee, where all the ants come from, and this is the situation that they're in, and this is the situation that they've got to get out of, and the spaceship up in orbit has been destroyed and they've got to survive down there until they're picked up. And of course, a lot of them, you know, there was that kind of form to it, there was that kind of structure to that first part of the story which was suddenly missing. And then it was about this guy, pirate guy, going around and he meets these people and he meets these scientists, and there's this riot here and he dispels the riot and then goes and meets these people and gets lost here and then goes there. And I'm just like, what's this story? What's this going on about? Why is this part of the armor story? He had the armor, he had a suit of armor that, so, you know, it continued on that there was this suit of armor MacGuffin kind of thing. But then that turned out not to be a MacGuffin. It became part of the story. And then that just carried on for ages and ages. Like another three and a half hours of this audiobook. And it was just following this guy called Jack Crow just wandering around doing boring shit in a boring, nasty, violent, misogynistic kind of way. And then with these other characters who are just like, blah. And then it cuts back and we start seeing Felix's story from the other point of view. Now, once we get back to Felix's story, everything that was kind of interesting and exciting that we had in that first one, that this was the first contact, this was the first time anyone went down onto the planet of Banshee, it was the first contact between aliens and these ants, and they were learning what weapons were effective and what weren't effective, and these special weapons and these other ways that the ants could disrupt the communication devices and stuff. They were learning these lessons. And then we cut back to Felix again, via a mildly interesting storytelling device where Jack Crow has got Felix's body armor. He's got his suit and he's playing back his recordings, his memories that he's getting back from Felix. So they kind of go into this, they kind of link themselves up and they're getting this the story told from Felix's point of view again. And so we see it from that kind of third person via the first person narration of Jack Crow. And we get this bit more of his story, but now it's sort of like, most people only go on one drop and then die, or a lot of people die on their first drop, their first military engagement where they get down there. It reminded me very much of the movie Aliens, where they're like, how many drops have you been on? And he's like, four simulated. How many real? Oh, it's my first one, or whatever it is. It felt very much like that. You know, you hear about these people like, well, did you do this? Like, how many drops have you been? How can you be in charge when this is your first contact? But we realize that now Felix has been on like 20 drops or 10 drops or 20 drops. Like, he just keeps going on more. And we're told that, nobody ever gets to 8 drops, because if you go on 8 drops, you're probably going to die on the last one. You know, you've only got like a 1 in 5 chance of surviving your 7th drop. When you go on the 7th drop, you're like a 1 in 5 or a 1 in 6 or 1 in 8, you know. You've got these statistics, and I'm like, well, okay, surely they don't just keep sending people on and on and on until they die. Surely people go, ah, that's enough for me. I go on retreat. I go, you know, back to the real world. I'm no longer a soldier because it's too dangerous to send them off. But then we get Felix. He just keeps getting sent back and sent back and sent back. And he's obviously now the most amazing. I mean, beforehand, he was the most amazing Superman soldier. But now he's even more of an amazing Superman soldier because he's gone on 20 drops and survived them all. And people are like, how many drops have you been on? 20. And he's like, ah, ha, ha, no, really. How many have you been on? 20. No, really. Stop joking now. How many drops have you been on? 20. Because, you know, nobody's ever been. And I'm just thinking, well, if he has done all of these drops, like, either everybody else are idiots and just dies really easy, or that first time that he went, you know, that whole 2.5 hour long story that we've got of him being amazing, that's now not clever anymore. If he, like, if you go through that and you're the lone survivor of one battle, you're like, wow, that's really amazing. You were the lone survivor of this battle and you got picked up afterwards, you know, and it was the last sweep for survivors and you got picked up and now you're sent back out there again. But if that happens 20 times, you realize, well, the first one isn't that exciting. However, if we read it from the point of view as someone going, right, now this is my next drop, now I'm definitely going to die on this one, there's no way I can survive. But he's just like, nope, let's get back to it. I mean, he is, you know, emotionally fatigued or whatever they say in the book. But, you know, I'm just thinking, like, it kind of diminishes his what happened at the beginning if he can just do it 20 times in a row. Us hearing about the first time suddenly isn't that amazing, except we're told, oh, nobody's ever done it 20 times in a row. Most people only do it 6 times in a row or 5 times in a row, and then they get put on the easy missions and retired. Maybe, I don't know, that's not really explained that well. And then we go back to Jack Crow again, and backwards and forwards, but it's just Jack Crow. And again, I don't want to give away too much of the story, but, like, there's a link between, you know, what's happening with Felix and what's happening with Jack Crow on this planet. And I, like I said, I'll get more into the story, but it's just so boring. Like, Jack Crow is like, he's got one mission. It's like, go down there and open up the, you know, and open up the defenses in this research facility so we can come down there and steal their fuel because we're out of fuel. And you're like, well, obviously there's going to be more to the story than that, but that's his main thing. And he does it, and it's like that section of him doing that is just described in maybe like half a paragraph. He's like, oh yeah, and I got into the computer system and I did this. And I'm like, so that's it. And then it's just him waiting around for the contract. There's a guy called White or Weiss or something, and he has to go and contact him, and there's someone else he meets, and over here he meets, and everyone he meets up with just trusts him straight away. Now, this is told in the first person, so I'm just like, does he just think people trust him? But he turns up here and say, hey, trust me. And they're like, we'll trust you. And then he goes across to the enemies of those people and say, hey, trust me, I'm working for you. And they're like, okay, we'll trust you. And then he meets someone else and like, hey, let's do it this way. No, we'll trust you. And then he double crosses people and says, hey, I'm back again. And I was working against you. And this whole bad situation's happened because I've done something bad. But now I'm on your side again. Do you trust me? We'll trust you. And then he goes back. And I'm just like, well, why is he like, how is this guy the most trustworthy person? And this Jack Crow guy, why is he so trustworthy? Why does everyone just want to sign up for his side? And why does he always want to go, like, why doesn't he just stick with the pirate side? He's obviously an awful character. But then he sees things from Felix's point of view via the recorded memories, and suddenly that brings him round and everyone understands. But yeah, it's terrible. Everything is based on massive coincidences. Like, at one point, now this thing happens, and in both stories, actually, it's like, and now this will be the last time, this will be the final time, and it just so happens that this bit of revelation, and then they wake up, and then this is happening, and you're like, okay, that's really convenient that he's just thought about that, and then woke up, and that next thing that links it together just happens immediately. But when that happens like 4 times in a row in the same chapter, and then he just happens to be here, he just happens to fall down this hill and land with these people, and just happens to roll across here and meet that person, you're like, very convenient. So the stories in both sides are just garbage. And then what's the big story? Like I say, at the beginning of with Felix on Banshee, it's like he has a story. He has to survive. They have to survive this encounter. What carries on that character? Nothing. There's this mystery. It's like, well, who is this guy? He doesn't want to think about who he was in a past life. And he puts that aside, and now he's got this new life as a soldier, and he puts aside his past life. What could his past life be? And you're like, I know what his past life is, because it mentions, like, he has, like, this vision, this memory, and he's like, and I was in this coronation ceremony, and I remember hearing this coronation music. I was like, okay, so he is the king of a planet, you know, it was talking about these kings, monarchs of planets. So he's a king of a planet or he's a prince of a planet, because you can't really do it by halves unless there's going to be a massive plot point later on where he's the runaway bodyguard of a thing. But you think, no, he's going to be the prince. He's going to be the king. And again, I don't want to give it away, but guess what happens at the end? The most boring character arc ever. Oh, person was pretending to, was a prince or a king all along, and now pretending wasn't. And then at the end, his friend goes, "Hey, wait a second, I recognize you." It's like Coming to America, but with bugs and really, really shit. So yeah, that whole thing. So let me get over to my notes. I've gone all without notes so far, just looking at Wikipedia. Let's go across here. Yeah. So the characters. Yeah, so we have these really, really boring characters. And the reason why they're boring is because Felix, when you meet him for the first time, he's a Superman. Like, he starts off, he's a bit drunk, and they get ready, and he goes down in, and he's the first one through. You know, he's the first one to drop down to the planet. And he goes, "Well, it's against regulations, but I'm going to go through with my gun in my hands." And you're like, "Well, why? Of course you'd go through with your gun in your hands." But he's like, "No, I'm making the decision to go through with my gun in his hands." And he comes out the other side, and there's ants. And so he has his gun in his hands, and it's fine. And he survives, and then he survives again, and survives again. And you're like, "Wow, this man is a Superman. He is a super soldier. There's nothing. He has done nothing wrong. There's nothing that's happened which hasn't gone perfectly for him. Every time that he's in a bad situation, he just happens to have the thought and do the things that gets him out of that situation perfectly. Where did he get these skills? Where did he get this ability? Where did it all come from?" And because we are not told anything about, he's hiding his backstory, we don't know. So we've got a preformed Superman, a preformed, amazing, fantastic guy. Jack Crow, on the other hand, is the exact opposite of this amazing preformed Superman. Jack Crow is an amazing preformed Superman. Wait a second, this is not the exact opposite. This is the same problem, because we don't know what his backstory is. Maybe Jack Crow has got a really interesting backstory. We don't get his backstory. What we have is an amazing preformed Superman. Both of them from, you know, very privileged positions in general. You know, they don't have to worry about it. You know, Jack Crow turns up to this planet, and there's a riot going on. "We need more food. We need more food. We need more food." And all the people who need more food, he doesn't care about them. They're just sort of like a slight obstacle in the way. And you realize, wow, these people don't give a shit about other people. You know, nothing matters to them. Nothing happens that touches them in any way, because, you know, they've been very rich. And Jack Crow is like, "Well, I've just..." At the beginning of the story, he gets given $26 million and his own spaceship. And you're like, "Wow, that's really handy that someone will just give that to you as a prepayment for something you haven't even done yet. Very nice of them." Yeah, it's just terrible. So we've got these... And Jack Crow, we don't get to know about his backstory. It's hinted that he's got this heroic backstory where, you know, there's these legends about him. He's like, "Well, you don't believe all the legends." You know, he's a bit of a Jack Sparrow. Well, Jack Crow and Jack Sparrow. Maybe we've got... Did I even make that... Is his name actually Jack Crow? It is Jack Crow. So he is a Jack Sparrow kind of character. He just turns up. You're like, "Well, this guy could be interesting, but he's also got... you know, all this stuff happening." But yeah, again, that's what I'm saying. There's these legends about him, and he's like, "Oh, that legend isn't really true." And he says, "People just want to know the Jack Crow stories." And I told, "Will I tell them the real Jack Crow story, or will I tell them the fake legend Jack Crow stories? Which one do they actually want?" And people, of course, want the legends, which are hinted at that they're not true. However, there's nothing here to say that those legends aren't true, because he is the most amazing guy. You know, he actually goes, "I pride myself. I'm the toughest man." Actually, I can't remember if it's Felix or Jack Crow who pride themselves on always being the toughest man in the universe. "I am the toughest man in the universe. Everything that I ever get into, I will be able to get out of just by my toughness, just by getting through it. You know, there's other people stronger than me, but I'm tougher than them. There's other people more intelligent than me, but I'm tougher than them. Everything is just through I am tough." And both characters who are both defined as the toughest men in the world. And it's like, when they meet, who will be the victor? Which one will fight each other? You know, when they fight each other at the end of this story, which one will win? And in the end, of course, that doesn't happen. The final showdown isn't a final showdown. It's just like, "Hey, this old drunk guy, I wonder if the old drunk guy called Lewis is Felix." Maybe it isn't. Not spoiler. Spoiler. The old drunk guy is Felix. The guy who owns the planet. You know, the guy who is king of another planet also owns this planet over here. It just happens to own two planets. Wow, what a hero. Turns up and already owns two planets. Great. Anyway, so, yeah, I had a note here. So, yeah, Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the legends about him. How can these legends not be true if he is this fantastic? If he is just so great at everything, he can just wander into enemy territory without any care in the world. It's like, oh, and all these people, I've just seen 40 people die. 40 people just kill each other, two sides of the battle. And the people who killed the most people who won out just went into that building. I'll just walk in there. No arm, no guns, no armor, nothing. I'll just walk in and I'll be fine. And he just walks in and is fine. He just goes, hey, trust me. And everyone trusts him. It's just like... Is he playing off the legend? Is the legend becoming true in him? Anyway, the most boring character. Like, there's no depth, there's no dimensions to any of these. There tries to be, but there isn't. Also, Jack Crow, it starts with him murdering a few people to get out of prison. You're like, well, okay, this kind of anti-hero kind of guy, he's going to murder some people. And then later on, murdering people, and then he's going to just destroy a whole town, destroy this whole thing, let up the guards, let people do stuff. And you're like, well, this guy is really despicable. He's fine just killing anyone. He's fine causing massive hardship for everyone. Like, can it get worse? And you're like, oh, he's a rapist as well. Oh, great. I thought we'd get through one of these books. I mean, it is a misogynistic book just in general, in tone. But then it's like, oh, and now he meets this woman. And they decide she's just this bitch. Just describes them as a bitch, you know. All the women are just described as idiots or bitches or angels. In either way, you know, there's no like depth to any of the female characters or the male characters, to be honest. But the way that the male misogynistic male characters describe the female characters is quite sickening. And then he meets this one, and she's just like, "Oh, let's not have sex." And she's like, "No, let's do it." And so he kind of slaps her down and wrestles her to the ground, and she's fighting back, and he's like, "Oh, but it's okay because she likes rough sex. She obviously likes rough sex. She likes to be held to the ground and like with a hand over her mouth and choked and then have sex with her. That's what she likes. Why is that?" And I'm just like, really? Is this what's happening? I was like, why is he so sure that the woman fighting back is actually, you know, this is actually just a tease and he's not just raping her? And then it turns out we get a bit of a backstory. She was raped as a teenager by her father or something, I don't know. And then she was raped again. And it's like, wow, this is a woman with a series, like a whole history of rape and abuse. But it's okay for me to do it because she's into that now. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is really... Like, I'm just so uncomfortable. I'm like, this is our hero? This is what we do? I mean, maybe I'm just not a good one for violent, sexual, anti-hero types. You know, it's not that they make me uncomfortable. It's just that it's like, how do you want me to like this guy when he's like this? And he's just so boring. This whole story is boring. I'd go more into it, but it's just, like, it just... My mind is numbing me thinking about what actually happens to Jack Crow and that whole story. I'm just like, there's a character called Holly and another one called this, and it's just boring. Everything is boring, so boring. Anyway, move on. What are my notes here? Oh, Nathan Kent, another amazing preform Superman, just turns up. And there was another woman, another female, who Felix fights with at the beginning, who is actually quite interesting. You're like, well, this is an interesting character. She is actually second best in the world because there was actually a man who was better than her, and now Felix is better than her. So we get this, you know, this woman who is playing second fiddle, but she's also like an amazing preformed Superman. We don't get to know about how these people got there, and that's I understand that like the hero's journey is a bit overdone, but sometimes you're like, I just want like a farm boy to, you know, to find a magic ring and then go off and have an adventure and come back and he's learnt a life lesson. And we just don't get any of that here at all. Moving on to, there's some story and character stuff, just terrible. Technology. Interesting that I like the idea of found technology, that you fight against someone, you find a starship and you find faster than light communication. You're like, well, we don't really understand how this works, but this is what we've got and this is what we can use now in our new battle with the army. And I'm like, oh, great. But then that doesn't really explain all of the different levels. I like the different levels, like, okay, this is what humans have managed to build and this is what we found. Okay, so there's amazing precursor technology, which is magical, and then our normal level of technology. But here, it's like the normal technology of humans is in some ways very magical, in other ways really, really basic, but in the same thing, like the suits that they're using, which are described quite a lot. And they're using these suits to kill, you know, to get around and to kill things. And I'm like, well, this is amazing, but like, do they not have proper radios? And then like, oh, but they're down on this surface of the planet, you know, radios, there's interruptions with the electromagnetics or something, you can lose your radio connection. I'm like, okay, well, surely they've got some backups, like some, you know, lasers or people waving flags to communicate between people, nothing of that. And then it describes like, oh, someone is injured, but now I can't drag the person across here because they're injured and they're in the suit and I need to get the suit back over here, but they're injured and it's really difficult to to carry the, or it's really difficult to pick the person up and drag them. And I was like, why not just have, I mean, if you want to go really high tech, why not have like everyone has like a rope, like a bit of rope that you can sling around someone and drag them back, or maybe like something on the, like a handle or something. And I'm just reading this thing going, wow, this is amazing inventions, but like, it's like they've never used them. It's like someone's just invented it. Someone's gone, okay, design an exoskeleton suit, and then going, okay. And someone's just drawn a picture and it's like, right, that is now the basis of a story. And you're like, you know, you should really put a bit more thought. Like when you get to that point in the story where you go, ah, what happens when you need to recharge the tanks or something? You're like, ah, oh, okay. Well, there's no nozzle here to recharge the tanks. And you're like, well, on your first picture that you drew of this thing, there was no nozzle. So now you have to get by without a nozzle. But whereas in the real world, engineers and technicians actually... they think about this stuff. You know, it's one of those things where whenever you read something on the internet where someone's come up with a new invention and all the commenters on the internet go, oh, I bet you haven't thought of this. Oh, I bet you haven't thought of that. Oh, I bet you haven't thought of this. And it's like, yeah, these people have been designing this for the last few years. And sometimes they haven't thought of that, but you thinking about it now is just as good as they have because it's still in the design process. Every person who makes a new bit of science fiction should write everyone who makes a new invention of any technology should write a science fiction story based on that invention, just to see what might happen, what heroes might come out of it and what villains might come out of it. Like when you actually make some technology, go, right, what if the worst person in the world got hold of this technology? What story could happen? You're like, well, redesign it so that doesn't happen. What if the best person, you know, it's like Murphy's Law. You know, if there's two ways to do something and one way ends in disaster, someone will accidentally pick the disaster way or intentionally pick the disaster way. That is what happens, and you've got to be careful of that. And it's like John Stakely just didn't even consider that. So another thing is why people in suits. And it's obvious that why people in suits, because in this world... John Stakely has constructed this world to be as much like Starship Troopers as possible. Starship Trooper had bugs. Here we have ants. There they have body armor and exoskeletons. Here they have body armor and exoskeletons. Why? It just seems like it's the same thing. But I'm thinking, why did they need this? Heinlein had a really good idea. He was like, okay, if we're going to have tactical nuclear weapons, if we have to do precision strikes with nuclear weapons, we need to make sure that we're hitting the right targets, we're not killing innocents, we're not doing all this kind of stuff, we're just destroying infrastructure, whatever it is. And the idea being that the Starship Troopers in Starship Troopers were intelligent delivery systems for tactical nuclear weapons. That was the point. That is what they're doing. You know, if they just wanted to destroy everything, they would just drop bombs from orbit. If they just wanted to kill lots of people, they would, you know, there's lots of other ways of doing it. But that's the point. You know, that's what that book is about. It's like, how do we deliver nuclear weapons? I wouldn't say safely, but precisely. That and the body armor is to protect the people going in. And other stuff as well. You know, there's lots of other stuff going on, but that's the main thing. Whereas here, in this book, they use the body armor to punch aliens, to shoot aliens, to kick aliens, to rip aliens' heads off. And we just have this, like, over and over and over and over again. Felix kicked this alien in the face. Felix broke this alien skull. They kicked them in the eye, punched him in the eye, poked him in the eye, slammed his fist through his heart, broke off its leg and hit it with his own leg. Time and time again, you're just like, well, why don't you just get like a bulldozer and just drive over? Why don't you just get a tank and drive over the... Why don't you just drop a bomb? And there's this like hand-wavy stuff going, oh, well, there's some stuff in the atmosphere, which means the missiles can't target directly. And you're just like, well, take down a gun, like a big gun, and just fire the gun into there. Like, take down a nuclear weapon. Like, there's a whole thing in, again, back to Aliens. Always comes back to Aliens with military science fiction. It's just, let's just take off a nuclear place from orbit. And you're like, yeah, let's just do that. Let's just take off a nuclear place from orbit. And I'm just thinking, why not? So the whole idea of these armored people, and they're obviously ineffective because every time that they go down, everyone dies except Felix. And I'm like, this is a failed strategy. Why do you keep sending it in? Which brings me back to the thing which has been brought up. I read a blog post about it, and it's like, why is military science fiction just so shit? And why is there always this certain mindset of the people who write it and the characters in it and maybe the fans of it who read it? And it's that you're not battling ants. You're not battling anything that is difficult, because if you want to show off someone who is superhuman and has got all the coolest technology, you have to fight something which is mindless and doesn't have any technology. And that's what ants are. They are mindless, technology-free targets. And so you've just got this person just fighting his way through, this Superman just bashing things and jumping on things and stamping on things and punching things in the face and punching them in the eye and punching his hand through its heart and ripping off his leg and beating it with it. He's just like over and over and over again, this is happening. But that's not the main... That's not what the heroes of military science fiction battle against. And all of these things, all of these stories with the preformed supermen or superwomen, you know, like the Starship Mutiny and what's the Honor Harrington one and Miles Vorkosigan, they don't fight against opponents because nobody is good enough. They fight against people in authority over them who are stupid, and that's what happens time and time again. I'm just like, this is from 1984, maybe this was the first one, but it's like time and time again, why is it always evil versus incompetence? Why is it always mindless hordes versus incompetent people on the other side, and the people who are stuck there? This could be a reaction to the Vietnam War. I understand that in the Vietnam War, the soldiers on the ground are like, we know how to fight, we knew this, but it's the people above us are ordering us in here and they don't have any experience with this enemy and we're having to do this stuff anyway. But it's just like, why do I have to read this same thing again? Incompetent leaders sending people in with bad technology and guns that don't work and that haven't been tested, and we go in and that's what we're fighting against. Because the enemy, the faceless enemy, isn't even there. Anyway, so... Which brings me to another thing. This is meant to be about, I think it actually says here on the, let me have a look on the audiobook page. I've lost it. Read more. No, I can't remember. But it says something here about that it's a book. It's on Wikipedia. So it it's superficial similarities to Starship Troopers, not that superficial to be honest, but concentrates on more psychological effects of the violence on human beings rather than on the political aspects of the military, which was the focus of Heinlein's novel. And I'm like, yes, that's what made Heinlein's novel interesting, because it's talking about weapons technology and political aspects and stuff. Here, concentrates on the psychological effects of violence on human beings. The thing is, in this book, the main character who does violence on human beings is Jack Crow. I almost called him Jack Sparrow then. Is Jack Crow. He is the person who is violent at other human beings. Whereas Felix is not. He is only ever violent to ants. Lots of humans die around him, but not because of him and not because of anything like that. And I'm just thinking, what are the horrors of war when you are doing nothing more than a dangerous bug hunt? Back to aliens again. It's just a bug hunt. Why is this important? Like, why is this terrifying? Why is this annoying to people? Like, lots of people are dying, but seeing lots of people die around you by what is like bugs, like it's a disease. It's like being a part of a plague. It's not about war. It's about lots of humans dying, but not about killing. My father was in the army. My father was shot at many times. His soldiers, some of them died around him. But what he has post-traumatic stress about isn't being shot at and his own people dying around him. What he has post-traumatic stress about is killing other people, is shooting and killing someone. That's why he was depressed for 30 years. That's why he's got post-traumatic stress disorder, you know. That's the thing that takes it. And Lewis doesn't have any of that. Not Lewis, Felix. Lewis is someone else. Felix, actually the same person. Felix doesn't have that. It's like, okay, I once, like personally, going back to Luke's story now, I once worked in a farm killing turkeys. And killing turkeys was one of the most horrific things I've ever done or seen. And I was the person doing it. If you try killing a turkey by slitting its throat, yeah, that sounds okay. No, electrocuting it until its brains boil, then slitting its throat. And then what you do to get, like, you pull out all the feathers, and then to get off the light fluff, you dip it in wax and then pull the wax off once the wax has dried, and you're pulling off all these things. Now, just imagine not doing a good enough job of killing a turkey. You fried its brains with electrodes until its eyes have boiled. Then you pull out all its feathers. Then you dip it in wax, and then it comes back to life. Then you slit its throat and all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, man, I fried this turkey's eyes. brain until its eyes boiled, slit its throat, pulled all its feathers out, dipped it in hot wax, and then it comes back to life and tries to look at me and makes noise. And you're like, that is horrific, but it doesn't really cause me post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, that's not warfare. Bug hunts is not warfare. Killing humans is warfare. So the whole idea that this is a book about the psychological impacts of violence on humans and warfare is just, it just doesn't even work. While I'm talking about the themes of what this book thinks it's about, all the way through there's talking about Felix has got this other person. The only interesting aspect of this book for me was this other personality that he goes into. It's called the machine. No, not the machine, the engine. So he's human, and then he's like, the engine takes over, and the engine does the work for Felix. You're like, okay, he's got the engine. That's what it's. That's why I looked here on the audiobook description. It says, "Is custom fitted body art and the culmination of 10,000 years of armor's craft, but also an odd being which seems to live within him, a cold killing machine he calls the engine." And I'm great. Okay, that's great. So he's got the engine, and he's got this outside armor. And I was thinking, the engine is his inside armor. The engine is his armor that's on the inside to protect him from all these horrors of war, of killing all these bugs, of seeing people die around him. The engine is the thing that gets through. And I was thinking, the engine is his, like, internal body armor. And I was like, that's mildly clever. Until, of course, later on in the book, in a discussion, a long discussion between two people, we've got this whole section where it's going, you know, he's got armor on the outside, but he's also got emotional armor on the inside. And I'm like, and I actually made a note of it on my phone when I was listening. I was like, sigh, emotional armor. And it's like, when you've got an idea like this, the book is called Armor, and you realize that there's this double meaning, and you pick that up in the first, you know, in the first 50 pages or the first, you know, few hours of listening to the audiobook. You're like, okay, that's something interesting there. Maybe we'll go in that side direction. But no, the direction it goes is people talking about it directly. And then you think, well, okay, so what's this emotional damage in his past? And you and it's like, his wife died in a freak accident. It's like, he didn't kill his wife accidentally. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was a freak accident. So someone's wife died without anybody being responsible, and then he's just like all cut up about it. It's like, that's the thing that made him want to die and kill and all. And then his wife was called Angel, and you're like, really? Your dead wife was called Angel? And it's just all of these things in the story. It's just like, one time again, the story. I know it's like the story is about wearing armor and emotional armor, but it's just so pathetic. The whole thing is so pathetic that there's not really anything more to say about this. It's a good audiobook. Tom Weiner does a good job, which is, like I say, not surprising. He is a it's not surprising. He's a professional. Unfortunately, John Stakely doesn't. His writing is terrible. Some of Tom Weiner's accents, he does this British accent. There's a non-specific British accent at one time, which is probably the single worst British accent I've ever heard in an audiobook, and that's going some. But generally, very well read. But the writing is just terrible. It's just, like, time and time again, I know that when I'm talking like this spontaneously without any script, I can repeat myself a bit. But, you know, you'd think that when someone goes through and edits it, they'll take out the massive amounts of repetition and go, well, all we've had here is just paragraph after paragraph of him punching someone and then breaking this thing and then punching this one through the heart and then poking this one in the eye and then taking off this one's leg and hitting him. It's like, I don't need to hear that many times. Let's have a bit of variety. And also, it's trying to be like futuristic, but I'm guessing Tom Stakely might be American, because he doesn't know how to use metric system. He goes, and over there, roughly a quarter of a kilometer away. And you're like, you know what a quarter of a kilometer is? It's 250 meters. Why not say 250 meters away? And all the time it's sort of like, over there, about a third of a kilometer away. It's like, yeah, over there, 300 meters away. That's how the metric system works. Like, once you actually get used to it, you don't say, well, you can say about a quarter of a kilometer, but you'd probably just say, you know, 200 meters, 250 meters, that kind of thing. And it's just all that time. That was just one thing that I made a note of, but just the language, not very good at all. Anyway, I'm down to the end of my notes. I think I've mentioned everything. If you want to listen to this book for free, you can go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and download a free audiobook. I would suggest not this one. Me and Juliana are going to record a podcast about the sequel to Ender's Game. So if you want more military science fiction, read Speaker for the Dead, which is in no way military science fiction, but it is better than pretty much every other military science fiction book. I don't want to get into why I don't like military science fiction, but any more than this book. This book is like the definition of why I don't. Everything that I don't like about military science fiction seems to be wrapped up in this book. And if you want to, yeah, go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. You can start a free trial there. It's what I do. I have a trial. Actually, I have more than a trial. I've been a very happy member of Audible for many years now, as you probably know, and are sick of hearing about on this podcast if you've listened a long time. Also, if you do want to know more about my opinions of military science fiction, you can download my military science fiction novel that I wrote. It's called Combat. You can find that at lukeburridge.com. Click on original fiction and you can find what I really want to say about military science fiction and not what I want to read about it. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do respond sometimes slowly, but I will get around to responding to everyone who emails me about that. And, of course, you can follow me and become my friends on goodreads.com. There's actually a great review here. What's it? My review, friends' reviews, and Alain DeWitt rated it 1 star. And he goes through 5 points there about what he doesn't like. And I didn't want to just go through his points, but I think he goes, there's no character development for the main characters. The plotting's simply, it's horrid. The action, much of the action involves Felix in combat in the title armor on the planet. Felix kicks an ant. Felix punches an ant. Felix rips out a head and ant's head off. Yeah, he's making the same points as me. Fourth, the writing style, and then there's, you know, all this other stuff. So I do enjoy reading other people's reviews of this. Rick rated it 4 stars. Julie, 2 stars. Elaine, 1 star. Other people, 5 stars. I don't understand how this has got the reputation it has. Sure, it's got body armor, and people are just like, hey, we need more military science fiction with body armor and exoskeletons. It's like, hey, here's some. That's good, isn't it? Good. It's got its superficial similarities to Starship Troopers. It's just terrible. I'm going to give it 1.5 stars because it is a very, very bad book. That's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.